Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, and that means the new episode of Graphic Policy Radio. We're the show that mixes comics, politics, and geekdom, and this is the show perfect for folks who realize the NSA stole their whole computer spying idea from Batman. I'm joined tonight by... So with this, especially with the recent revelations, I'm thinking of The Dark Knight and the whole using phones to triangulate where the Joker is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. No, it's totally true. It's totally true. You may finish introducing me now, Brett.
Yes. So, and joining me tonight is always is how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. And that's totally right, dude. I totally stole it from Batman. But I didn't elect Batman as my government. You know,
this is true.
I elected Batgirl as my senator in the 70s, but I did not elect Batman personally as my government. And
well,
therefore, I object to the spying.
I'm trying to think of the quote of like, you don't get the hero you, or I'm not the hero they want. I'm like the hero they deserve, or something like that.
They need, I think.
Or what they need. Yeah, that's it. We'll spin that one off at some point. We could have some fun with it. That'd be a good rally poster.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We've got a couple topics for tonight. And the first one, it's a series that's near and dear to both our hearts, is The End of FF, which wrapped up with issue 16 this past week.
Ah, so sad to see it go.
I'm with you.
I mean, FF was one of the things that I would read first when I got my box and looked forward to every month and always filled me with such joy and happiness. How many comics can you say that about, you know? Pure, unadulterated joy and happiness every time I pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, it was a series where... Yeah, I mean, it was one of the first ones I read in my pull pile every single week that it came out. And I would actually argue it is one of the few comics where, the spinoff has surpassed the main series, like, by far. Because, I mean, it was basically a spinoff of Fantastic Four, so...
That
everyone,
is true. I, it's hard for me to speak since I actually haven't been reading Fantastic Four. But I'll tell you, I haven't really missed that I've been reading it, like... The very, very conclusion of FF was the only issue I've read where I had a moment of being like, oh, yeah, wasn't there this other Fantastic Four book that was going on that maybe was supposed to parallel this? I guess I should have checked on that. But till this issue, I never felt like I missed anything.
And you know, it's the end of the series, and that was a very well-done example of being able to read one and totally enjoying it, and only when you read the other one you maybe got a little bit more insight to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and even then the insight that you got wasn't anything like major, where there wasn't like a huge revelation. It was just a parallel story that was very similar from a different perspective. And even then the perspective wasn't... One didn't have to do much with the other one. They both battled Doom in this blown-up thing, but in different universes. And, yeah, it gets confusing. But, I mean, you didn't have to read the one to enjoy the other.
Was the whole Doom the Annihilating Conqueror thing explained in the other comic?
A little bit better. That would probably have been the only thing that was a little bit better. So, yeah, the Annihilating Conqueror, and even then I don't think it was explained all that well. Is there is just this point in time where Doom, like, Cole Cox and Nihilus, takes his power, beats the crap out of King, takes his power, becomes Doom, all the Conqueror, all whatever, Annihilating Conqueror, and it's like this fixed point no matter what the dimension is, that it is a very important event, and that's about what you got out of it.
Yeah, I always say that one of the things that enables you to become a comic book fan of the superhero genre, specifically of Big Two, probably less essential with other publishers, is your willingness to just go along with it when there's something that's not explained to you, and that there's back, you can tell that there's a backstory, and they, and you can tell that somebody expects you already know these references, and you just don't know them. You just roll with it. You're like, okay, something happens. I'm okay with that. I'm going to read this anyway. And your willingness to roll with that, like, that is key to your ability to become a comics fan of the big two, basically. And I've always had a really high roll with it ability, so I just wasn't, I never really thought about it or was fazed by the fact that, like, it was never explained. But I see how it could be a weakness from a literary standpoint, you know, for normal people who worry about things like that. So.
Yeah, there, I will say in FF, especially I think with the last issue, there was a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't quite explained and was sort of thrown out there, and you just went with it. And I was cool with it. Like, to me, FF was, it was so much fun to read that you could overlook a lot of that stuff and just not care.
Yeah.
Like, even
you
at
know,
the
and
end,
I
there
certainly,
was...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, at the end, there was the whole Caesar thing, which just seemed to, like, go away.
Mm-hmm. Well, Caesar's still there. He's in the climactic final double-page spread that I want a print of on my wall so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it, yeah, I mean, it, like, it was a good, it was fun. Like, it was just a fun series, and it seems like we might see something in the future, based off the ending of, like, To Continue or whatever it was. It had a very Back to the Future ending.
Oh, yeah. It did. But I found the close to be, it was, you know, it definitely did what I needed it to do, and it was moving and funny and heartwarming, and it wrapped things together, and they handled the question of how do you end Doom without killing Doom. You know, apparently the answer is you really freaking traumatize him in a equal way to how he has traumatized and hurt you, but without actually killing anybody. Just that was a really interesting solution to that.
I would actually say it's something very fitting considering the series was, I mean, it was kind of at the end where Mr. Fantastic said it was like, you did this with a bunch of kids. And that's what the focus of FF really was the kids and their relationship and their growing up. So to be able to beat trap and defeat Doom without hurting him or like killing him or really maiming him, I think speaks a lot to the series and what the series was kind of about.
Yeah, it really was amazing. Like, it worked for me, you know.
Yeah, and it was fun. It was one of those great comics that were just a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was heartwarming. It had a lot of magic to it, and creativity and ingenuity, and a lot of character. It had a really fun ensemble cast. I enjoyed reading the kids a lot, and I don't always enjoy reading kids. Not, you know, it does not go without saying. You know, and they investigated a lot of different creative ideas, like the whole Yancey Street Gang is anonymous sort of related parallel. You know, there were, like, fun things like that they put in. They really worked. It was also a series that sort of worked its way around the Marvel Universe to connect a number of things together in interesting and creative ways, although it still seemed very much a part of the Fantastic Four's corner of the universe, like the kinds of characters and things that the Fantastic Four do deal with. But, like, you know, like, I was joking with Frank about how they brought in Manfred the Magician. I loved that joke about, like, oh, we brought in a 1940s magician. I hope we can pay him 1940s money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like that, which I totally got a chuckle out of that. But, like, you know, like bringing together these different parts of the world in which they inhabit in ways that I think are creative and new. But the whole comic was really about family and a super inclusive vision of what family meant. You know, I mean, like the defining thing that one of the villains said is, you know, that when the wizard was trying to kidnap his adorable child self was useless. All of you pale before our heteronormative cisgendered classification of family. Blastar, show them all how nuclear a family we truly can be. And their Ant-Man reports, you know, who gave you the right to decide who it is and isn't a family? And, like, that is, I think, the heart of the comic. And what's interesting is at the very end, it reminds you that Dr. Doom is part of somebody's family too.
Yep.
Right? Because you have Illyria calling him Uncle Doom. I think he's like her god uncle or whatever. And it's weird. Like I don't know FF enough to really know that much about the depth of the relationship, but I did know that there was something where like Dr. Doom thinks Illyria is awesome, basically.
Well, she I took was
folks,
her.
I know we're talking about Illyria is Sue Storm and Lee Richards' daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, like her grown up in a weird thing. That wasn't explained to me a whole lot, so I was a little confused on that one.
Well, no, but like even as a child, though, like Dr. Doom has a relationship. Like,
yeah.
He's like with like Valeria, he like thinks she's like super genius kid. I mean, she obviously must be a super genius kid, whatever. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah. There was that whole thing.
Talk about Uncle Doom.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that was a nice touch at the end where she was, there was that references to Uncle Doom a lot, kind of tied back to a lot of that. There was a slight, like, one panel of the Yancey Street Gang on their computer, which was awesome. You know, that's the thing I really liked about that particular final issue is it referenced a lot of stuff through, I think, both runs of the series. And it was subtle, and it was all really, really subtle, which was nice.
Yeah. I never felt like I was missing anything, you know. Again, like, I'm not someone who's really read a lot of Fantastic Four, per se.
Yeah, there was... So the only thing for me was the older version of Valeria with the red hair.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of missed... It was a little confusing to me.
That was a bit confusing, yeah. But, you know,
yeah,
hair dye totally exists. For example, I dye my hair red, so I can see how that could be something Valeria decides to do in the future.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that. It was just, like, how she got from point A to point B, basically. This was just another... There's been so many different versions of her from the future. It was like, wait, there's another one?
I didn't catch that there were multiple ones.
So, yeah, so that's a Fantastic Four thing, I think, and maybe it was in the previous volume of FF, was there was a storyline where her and her brother came back from the future to do some stuff, and she was not like that. She looked like herself, but grown up. But, I mean, that's the thing with Marvel. There's, like, 3 billion different versions and timelines, and Kang is really Iron Lad grown up, and the version that we see of Kang here turns into another Kang in the future. And yeah, if you actually think about it, your head hurts.
Kang. Kang is just a great name to say. Kang.
I feel like it's an awesome name for a cat. Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah. That was something we did consider that actually. That is in the list of names we considered for our cat, as was MODOK.
Awesome.
Mechanical organism designed for cuddling.
So, not to get off topic on that, there is a Lego set coming out where there's a Lego MODOK.
Oh my gosh. When I announced MODOK, my cat actually did just come up to me, and now he's staring into my face. So maybe he feels that that would have been a better name for him than Rocket. I don't know. Rocket, we can discuss that later. But yeah, no, Kang actually was on the short list of names for cat. But anyway,
that is awesome.
Yeah, like I really felt like the plotting and storyline that Matt Fraction wrote maintained itself well even after he stopped working on the book. You know, Kit Allred, you know, filled in well, and you know, the entire time, the art, of course, was fantastic, dynamic, creative. They had some really exciting page layouts that you don't see other people experimenting with. It all has that very sort of classic retro vibe to the art as well. That's particularly well-suited to redrawing Kirby characters, which, of course, they did in abundance. But I loved how they handled things like the Julius Caesar is a pink, gaseous alien idea. I could tell that wasn't, you know, from this comic that it was something that had been established elsewhere, but visually yeah. representation of it was great. And, you know, you just sort of roll with it. And I do think that this was probably the first comic to have a transgendered kid come out and announce, you know, that she wants to be identified as female. Or, like, I don't think that had happened with any comic that I'd seen before. And they think they handled it really well. And, you know, the trans people I've spoken with, they thought it was pretty awesome, too. So I think that they did
well,
a good job of that. I think
I
the
mean,
big find from the – sorry, go ahead.
Say there was a transgender character in Batgirl, but she didn't come out per se. Like, she was already
it's different with the kids. It's different with
yeah.
kids. You know, like having it be a kid as opposed to an adult.
I also thought the
Batgirl comic did a good job of it too. But.
Yeah, I will say this is probably the first time you've ever seen someone like actually come out, like go from a boy to wearing dresses and say who I am. I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there had been anybody where they really tackled it like that before. And also just to recognize that this is something that, like, yeah, children actually know things like this. Children know how they feel. And, you know, to honor that and respect that. Like, there's that adorable panel where Bentley says, "You look so happy," to her. And she's like, "Thank you, I feel much better." And, like, it's just like, oh, so good. I was going to say, I think one of the real finds of this comic is how ridiculously adorable Moloids are. I looked up online to get more Moloid background when I first saw them in this comic, and I could find no indication of, like, well, one, like, why one of them was a head in a jar. That's okay. But, like, why they were so cute and why they spoke like that. And I feel like it must have just been created for the comic that they would speak in that particular way and where they were drawn in that style. But the Moloid kids are just nonstop adorable. I just want to have them hanging out in my apartment and eating my nail polish like they eat Jim's nail polish. I mean, hopefully it's not toxic for them. So.
And attempting to woo
pretty
you.
It's toxic for us, you know, but, yeah. I'm sorry?
I was saying, and attempting to woo you?
They're attempting to block. See, they have to block the woo. They're there to block the woo.
Oh, that's it.
But, yeah. Oh, although, actually, at the end, are they saying that they want Sting and Jen to get together?
That was the way I took it, was that they now have a goal to get Thing and She-Hulk together.
I really hope we get more of those crazy Moloid kids, because they are seriously the cutest thing in the world. I don't know, like, what or who I've seen is as cute as that in the comics lately. They're just so adorable. I can't get over it. I can't get over a date is a fruit. Like, you can hear their little weird, different alien-y voices, and beautifully done. Really, really beautifully done. But
yeah,
I have not been reading at that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, with the Moloid, especially with the one character, you know, making her declaration and that acceptance, like, I think that scene and, you know, the follow-up with the wizard and his comment about heteronormative, like that, those two things just sum up the entire series, that it really is about family and acceptance and, you know, just trying to make yourself better. And I'm like, it is a positive comic in a great, great way.
It really is, yeah. Yeah, and it was great to have Ant-Man be the lead in that, actually, with his story.
Yeah.
Up front, having it circle around, you know, with Mr. Fantastic saying that he wants to be his lab assistant. Nice to hear that for a change.
Yeah, I mean, like, so you get the great with that is, you know, he was a character that, you know, was in jail, was looking for redemption, became a hero, his daughter was killed, has kind of been brooding. By Doom, hasn't really, I don't say, recovered from it. You know, he, out of everyone to, like, lead those kids and lead them forward, you know, he was the perfect character for it. I mean, he really, you know, if you want to call the series a story of, like, moving forward and finding your better self, like, I can't think of another character that would fit that role more than him.
That's great. That's a great point. You know, the only thing that I really missed is I would have liked to see more with Medusa, but I say that a lot. But the comics did more with Medusa than most comics do, you know. And most comics sort of treat her like, I don't know, they don't really give her any personality. Like, they treat her like because she's a queen, like, that's all there is to her. There's nothing else. They definitely gave her more character and more interesting in this than she's been in anything I've read lately. But I would have liked more screen time for her in the end of the day, I think would be the only thing I would quibble with.
Yeah, for her, I just hope she gets more of the focus in humanity. Like, that's where she should really stand out. Black Bolt is a wall, and she's stepping up as the leader, trying to figure out the future of the Inhumans. So
maybe I'm privileging verbal communication, which is something that I've been known to do as someone who talks a lot. But I always figured she was in charge anyway, because Black Bolt doesn't say anything.
Yeah, I mean, she was kind of the one that interpreted whatever he meant and say. Like, I always assumed she just was in sync with him and knew what he wanted, type of thing. And she was really kind of the real power behind the throne.
I think he was just going along with her, though. It was just like, sure, you'd be the leader of our people. It's all cool.
This is a good point. I can't dispute this. It is a good theory. I cannot. I can't dispute that one way or the other. So I mean, there's a good chance she was really in charge.
But it'll be fun.
But yeah, I mean, she'll take her spot back soon with Inhumanity, and I mean, she's a great human that I would hope more of. Of course, we're gonna see more of She-Hulk. I mean, she gets her own comic in April-ish, maybe February.
Is that long? I have to wait that long?
It might be February, March. I can look it up. Hold on. I speak without actually looking things up. It's soon. I know it's soon. I just don't know how soon.
I don't want to have to wait that long, but I guess I'll have to wait.
I'm hoping that they rush this. I think, Charles is an awesome writer, and I think he's going to do a great balance of her being a lawyer versus a superhero. My hope is that there is references to what has happened in FF, especially her wooing of Ben. On sale February. Okay, there we go. February 12th is when she gets her own comic. So I was a little off by like 2 months.
And she was at the top of my list of heroes who use their own comic, and now that she has one, I had to come up with some other ideas.
Yeah, that was the other option. There was like Elektra, oh wait, she's got one. Black Widow, oh wait, she's got one.
Mm-hmm. But it's okay. I put together a big list of people who still need one. But it's been really edifying seeing these.
Interesting. Okay. To me, it was a great ending for FF. I will say, and I actually had discussion with the guys at the local comic shop, is that Fantastic Four run was complete crap. It was also 16 issues, and it was, to me, one of the worst runs of Fantastic Four I've ever read. So if folks want to check it out, go with FF, skip Fantastic Four.
Yeah, tell me, what was so bad about it? Because I didn't know.
So the series started off with the reason they went on their sabbatical is because Mr. Fantastic figured out that their powers were kind of breaking down and like he was losing his elasticity and Sue would turn invisible completely at some point. So they go on this journey to like solve everything. But again, here's the problem. They have a son who can like warp reality and a super genius daughter. I'm pretty sure between the two of them and Mr. Fantastic, they could probably solve the whole thing in like no time at all. And then it turns into this whole like time travel thing. And there were things with like, they put in a beacon so they could like find home and be able to travel easier, but that still doesn't really make a lot of sense because you need to start somehow. So like if you have a beacon to kind of, and you have to go in the past to set the beacon up, wouldn't you have trouble getting in the past to begin with because there's no beacon to begin with? But that's a whole other thing. So that didn't make a lot of sense. And they just travel around the world, around the universe. And there were things like, their daughter being recognized was never really explained why everyone seems to know her. And just overall, it just kind of like plotted. You know what? It seemed like bad episodes of Doctor Who is the best way I can describe it, where it didn't seem to pick up the fun or entertainment of Doctor Who. Instead, it was like, we're just going to send them around to different times and different situations and let them in different worlds and let them get out of it.
Yeah.
But that was it. Like, it wasn't, there was something missing. And then it just got to the end where you get to the story with Doom and everything kind of led to that scene. And they teamed up with another version of the Fantastic Four. And it kind of fell apart. The whole point was like, really, this is what everything's been leading to. It was bad. Like, I just was not a fan. The payoff was horrible. But they're rebooting, so that's nice.
Good to hear it.
Yeah.
But I have to say, though, the cover of the big reboot, which they've been promoting, I don't know. Maybe it's just the drawing doesn't do much for me. It looks like another weird Path of Sue Storm story.
Yeah, I forgot what the story is on it, but, I mean, I'll give it a shot. Fantastic Four, to me, is really hit and miss. The FF has been better than Fantastic Four recently, or pretty much the entire run. But Fantastic Four, to me, it's like either really good or really bad. There's no in-between.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've heard that from others, too. You know, the thing people don't understand, also, is, like, Sue Storm is one of the most powerful powers in the entire universe, and in terms of, like, I mean, a lot of things, but certainly in terms of fighting, and no one ever recognizes it because she's a mom.
Yeah, well, that's what's saying. Like, the main Marvel U, she doesn't really do it a lot. She uses her powers a lot of defensive stuff, but in, like, the Ultimate U, she's way more of a kick-ass offensive fighter. And never quite.
Oh, yeah.
Picked up the two, like, the difference, and it's weird that she doesn't do offensive stuff as more, but yeah, I mean, we'll see what the new volume is like, and if it's any good. I'm willing to give it a shot.
It'd be great to see a woman writing that book for a change, actually. Now I've got something to lobby for.
Yeah, that would actually be really, it would be interesting. It would be a good good take. Like, I think a woman would be good, or find her, like, a really hardcore sci-fi writer would be another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't. I couldn't tell you.
Okay, so we have to get a really hardcore female sci-fi writer to be the next writer of Fantastic Four. We have proclaimed it.
I'm game. I'm thinking we start a petition.
That's what we're about here. Petitions. We get our demands met.
We don't do enough petitions. I feel like we need to do more petitions.
No, we don't. We need to do petitions. I don't do nearly enough of that in my real life, so.
Yes, because we need to do that somewhere else. okay, so speaking of petitions, do we want to move on to awesome characters that really should be getting their own series?
Yes. In fact, we should totally talk about awesome characters who should be getting their new series. I even already hinted on this topic as if all of our listeners had been sitting around reading Twitter to know that this was a topic that I would be that we'd be bringing up. But yes, one of the subjects of today's conversation is going to be which characters most deserve their own solo series. You know, as Brett rightly pointed out, a number of characters we always said needed their own solo series, like She-Hulk, Elektra, Black Widow, are having their own solo series now. Yay! So now who's the next wave of people who need to get their own solo books? You know, this can be based on the character being interesting or the character filling a certain niche in the market, and certainly with respect to having greater diversity, that being another huge concern of ours. So I put together some thoughts, and I know Brett put together some thoughts too, and if you're out there on the Twitters, you should totally tweet at us with your suggestions. I know most people listen to this show not live. So even if you're listening to this not live, you should still tweet at Graphic Policy who you think deserves their solo series when you're listening to this episode.
We're going to see if we can get some responses. I'm going to go tweet live and hopefully we get people
right
to
now.
Participate. So you want to go up first and throw out your ideas?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
We can go back and forth.
So the first person, let's alternate. That's good. We'll alternate. Okay. My first person who came to mind for me was Emma Frost. We know that she's doing some interesting stuff beyond what you see on the page, because whenever they give her some solo scenes in any comic, she's always up to something interesting and covert and dangerous and sexy and cool. So I think that we'd like to just spend more time and see maybe what she's actually up to. She's certainly one of the most complex and interesting female superhero-ish characters around, and I love how honest she is about some things about herself and how so completely hidden she is about other aspects of herself. She has a fascinating life story. Some people can write her very, very fun. If you're writing her well, she's really funny. And the driest of humor of all. And it's a long past time for Emma Frost to get her own solo series.
Okay. I'm going to go with another X-Man. Hopefully I can steal one from you. I am picking Storm as my first one. And the primary reason is, one, she is now becoming the Wolverine of X-Men, that she's in like 3 billion books. But so there's that. So how the hell does she balance all of that? But the other is, I think she's got so many like unfinished plot lines and things that she needs to deal with. I think her out there as an African-American woman, or just even an African woman, because she really is from Africa.
Yeah, she just lives in America for like a really freaking long time, but she grew up in Africa.
Yeah, so like dealing with that as a leader of the mutant community, she was a queen at one point, she's considered a goddess. Like, she's had solo miniseries, but I think an ongoing book to explore all that, especially her, right now, her, like, weird relationship between Wolverine and the Black Panther and where all that is. Like, I think a good series of Storm finding Storm would be awesome.
I think that's a fantastic idea. You're right. She has so much unfinished history that nobody's ever really tackled. There's so much story in there to be told. Did you have any thoughts about my suggestion?
Yeah, like, I think Emma would be a fascinating one. That's one, I'm convinced that she's still doing stuff behind the scenes that we never hear about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's doing all kinds of shit. She's probably has some, like, crazy, like, money-making stuff that she's got going on. I mean, because remember, she's like super rich, but she's a self-made person. She's not actually wealthy, like, hereditarily, even though she pretends that she is.
Yeah.
So what kind of financial shenanigans does she have going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the great one, like, her, one of my favorite things recently with Emma was Uncanny X-Men, where they go on a spending spree, like, all the girls are like, we need to go shopping. And they drag Emma, and they kick in her door, and she's, like, sleeping in a weird position. And it, like, really, it was really funny, and it humanized her, and I think, and she kind of made comments about, like, her money and her spending and all that stuff that hinted at so much more that would, like, I'm with you. I think it would be a fascinating, fun series to do.
Yeah, totally. My next suggestion is Prodigy, who David Alane, who we got to spend some more time with most recently in Young Avengers, originally comes from Runaways. He is a depowered mutant who is still, like, because his old power was, like, learning everything, he still has all the knowledge he used to have. Being smarter than, you know, smarter and wiser than your years as a teenager, a lot of teenagers feel that way, and it'd be great to have a story featuring young African-American man who actually is literally wise beyond his years, and the challenges he's dealing with trying to, like, get a job and work and, you know, integrate into normal life after being a superhero and sort of being the poster child for the breakaway sect that Cyclops had. And he was so well-written by Kieran Gillen. I mean, I really felt like I found his voice in there beyond what I've even seen reading Runaways. And it would be great to have the only bisexual character in his own solo series that I could think of.
That's what I was just about to bring up.
But Loki's sort of beyond such things, but, you know. But yeah, like, that would be amazing to have. And I think that the fandoms that came from behind Runaways and Young Avengers could certainly promote him to the level where that would sell a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that, I mean, to me, the it's a fascinating character just because he seems to take away, like, a lot of this. He learns more than just knowledge from people and things, that he just takes away other personality traits. And that thing with the sexuality was seems so fascinating and something that could, add, you know, should be explored. Yeah, I'm all for that one. That would be a really, really good one. I'm going to go with someone that we were just talking about. I think Scott Lang deserves his own series. He's got enough open threads. There's enough out there to discuss and dive into that, you know, like the whole him dealing with his daughter, what was touched upon in FF, I really don't think he dealt with it. Plus now there's this potential relationship. Overall.
Yeah, with Katy Perry. Darla Deering.
Yeah. Between all that, like, it would be really good. Plus, there's now this whole, he's exploring Pym particles, which could be fascinating. Like a mad scientist or a guy trying to balance a normal life with being a superhero would be really, really good.
Yeah.
Almost,
especially,
I would say
he,
almost.
He already said himself that he doesn't want to have it. He doesn't want to do any. He's going to be out of the superheroing bit for a little bit doing science stuff. So that would sort of constrain it somewhat, but it could be a creative constraint, you know?
But I don't even think he needs, it wouldn't be that huge of a constraint, because I don't know if you read Animal Man with DC. Was that's how it started, was like this guy who didn't really want to be a hero anymore, was kind of dragged into it, was always somewhat hesitant, trying to balance a family life. Like, I think that would be really, really interesting. Plus, if you take in the Katy Perry knockoff, her dealing with celebrity and him being a superhero who isn't superheroing anymore would be an awesome like comparison, and just having those two deal with those their lives would be really, really fascinating.
Yeah, that could be really cool. Really cool. My next pick is a blast from the past. Coming back from the era of The Authority and Stormwatch, I propose solo series for Angela Spica, a.k.a. The Engineer. She has some of the most interesting superpowers. All of her blood has been replaced by, she's replaced all of her blood with nanorobots, basically. And she's a super scientist. There really are no female super scientist characters out there. And she's really fascinating. She uses her powers in super creative ways. Like, they were always doing really interesting things with her, like, in terms of how she was using her powers. And really fun, brainy woman. She deserves her own series, and she's not doing anything right now. Not having her around is really a loss. Do you remember her?
I only vaguely know the character, so this one I'm going to rely on you. I definitely do not know enough to speak one way or the other. But, yeah, I mean, it. I think maybe I read a little bit of the character in Stormwatch. Possibly. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure. I'm pretty blank on this one.
Well,
just for lack of knowledge.
You have to agree, though, that there aren't any female super scientists, really.
Well, that's what I'm trying to think of. Like, I can't think of any. I mean, you had Sue Storm, but they don't play up her being a scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about what I got. I can't think of anyone in DC universe, though they don't really get into, like, crazy scientists in DC.
I think B is a super scientist, right, Bumblebee? No, she was a lab assistant. Like, so she was on her way to be a super scientist, but she was, like, still, like, a grad student or something like that. She's, like, the closest they have.
That one I might not know.
Bumblebee. She's in, like, I don't know. She's always in different team books. She was, like, I think frighteningly enough, she was the first African-American woman superhero from DC.
I'm going to have to Google that one. I really don't know.
That shows you how obscure, unfortunately, she is. But, yeah, I don't think she officially counts as super scientist. Well, maybe she is now. I don't know. When she was created, I mean, since she was created in, like, the late 70s, she certainly has had time to become a professional scientist herself since then. But I think she was, like, a lab assistant or something at the time when she got her powers.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to go look that one. I have no idea.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, you're even out obscuring me on this one.
Maybe
okay.
We need to get her now.
So my pick, I'm going to go with Lex Luthor. And this one is an interesting one because I think a ongoing series from his perspective, you've got multiple things. Is one, you've got a guy who thinks he's doing the right thing, who really isn't necessarily a bad guy in his own mind. He's just trying to protect Earth from an alien invasion. So you've got that.
Yep.
You also have him being, like, super insecure because clearly Superman is, you know, perfect in everything, and there's an insecurity level in why Luthor reacts the way he does. And then the other is you've got a modern, you know, a guy who heads up a modern-day corporation. And having him deal with, you know, and reflecting on real issues going on in the corporate world through him would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by Lex Luthor. I think that would be a really neat angle. He has had his own solo series before, essentially, though. I was reading Action Comics briefly when he was the protagonist, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I guess he did. I mean, he highlighted for, I think it was less than a year. But yeah, he was kind of the main character on that one. See, he can do it. He can do it again. And he's going to get the spotlight soon. There's a weird announcement is that he will be in the next iteration of Justice League.
Oh.
Post DC, like a big event wrapping up in, I think, April or whenever, there's this new version of the Justice League that's like Batman, Lex Luthor, Captain Cold. I forgot who else. Like, it is a really interesting and strange lineup. Could be cool.
Okay. That would be interesting. I'd read that. I just dug up some stuff about Bumblebee I'll be sharing with you later. So actually, apparently she is her own scientist. She's not a lab assistant, so she's another female super scientist. But they're very few and far between, and so we definitely deserve Angie, the engineer. My next pick was Allison Blair, a.k.a. Dazzler.
Nice.
They have
really
some weird stuff right now. They have to just, like, finish doing whatever it is. I don't care what it is they're doing with her. Like, wrap that up, get back to Dazzler. I love somebody claimed that I think one of the comics are saying that Dazzler is going to eventually become the first mutant president, which
yeah.
I guess makes sense, since Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been the first action star governor. Why not have another entertainer? But I don't know. Dazzler is a lot of fun. There's so many different things you can do with her. I would love to see something that actually dealt with her more as an artist, though. I liked how they were characterizing her most recently in... No, I guess it was Matt Fraction. I was reading some older Matt Fraction X-Men stuff. And by older, I mean a couple years ago, not actually older. They sort of were acting like she was like this... She'd been really popular, then she went out of fashion, but people who were real music geeks came to recognize that her stuff had been really ahead of its time and really good. So, like, if you were a connoisseur, you were into her now, and that, like, she was trying to make a comeback. And I like that kind of angle on her.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, so they've been doing some interesting stuff with her in X-Men, and that she's now supposedly, like, the liaison between S.H.I.E.L.D., and the mutant community, and there was hints that she would be the first mutant president. Now we found out that she's been knocked out, and Mystique is taking her place to cause all kinds of issues. But yeah, I mean, she's always been a character that's kind of in the background that deserves like a solid push. She'd be fun because there's so much you can do with her.
Yeah, definitely. And I just find what they're doing with her now to be confusing, and I don't know. I don't like it. So who's
your next
pick?
So this one's going to be... What's that?
You do like what they're doing with her now?
Oh, I like her being the liaison between S.H.I.E.L.D. and the mutants. Like, they need a good character, and I think she fits with it.
I think they need someone to do that. I have no idea why that would be her. What does she have to do with S.H.I.E.L.D.? Like, I don't get it.
And I think she's just because she's a well-known name, basically. Like, wouldn't you do that if you had to go pick someone to be, like, your liaison? Wouldn't you want someone who's, like, somewhat known by the public? Like, clearly the public doesn't think of her as a mutant. They think of her as a rock star. Like, I could see the bureaucratic political nonsense where they're like, she would be awesome in this job. It's realistic to me.
It feels like a weird fit.
So, all right, mine's a little bit goofy. I'm going with Squirrel Girl.
Oh, Squirrel Girl.
And the reason I'm going with Squirrel Girl, so last we saw her, and I think she still is, she was the nanny for Luke Cage and his wife. Taking care of... Yeah, Jessica Jones. Taking care of their daughter while they were Avengers. I think she's still in that role. I'm not 100% sure. But to see, there was one comic that was an Avengers comic when it was like the Avengers mansion was under attack and it was all from Squirrel Girl's perspective of protecting this baby, which was beyond awesome. And I like this idea of, like, she really does have the crappiest powers. She controls squirrels. And to see her, like, having to protect this baby while the baby's under threat all the time could be one of the funniest comics you could ever imagine. Like, I'm imagining something along the line of, like, Hawkeye-ish, but a little bit more goofy. And seeing it from her perspective, I think it would just be fun. So to me, again, that's, like, one of those really goofy, fun comics.
Sounds cool. I like it. Squirrel Girl. The Life and Times of a Nanny in Manhattan. And anything
exactly.
That gets us more Luke Cage and more Jessica Jones, I support, because I love Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. In fact, if he wasn't leading a book right now, he would be on my list of people most deserving of a solo book. And there should always be, like, something where he's in the lead of it, you know?
I am very happy they're having an Iron Fist comic coming back. I am so, so happy about that. Speaking of Luke Cage.
Oh, they are?
Yeah,
okay,
so they've got,
coming back.
They've got a new
together?
One. No, they're not going to be together. It's an Iron Fist solo series, which he used to have, because he would be on my list if that wasn't coming out. But his solo
really?
Series.
Like, why do I care about him? Why do I care?
Are you like a kung fu fan?
Yeah, but I prefer my kung fu with a little bit more flavor than like random blonde guy who's rich.
No, go and find the run of his. It came out like 3 years ago, I think, maybe 4 years ago. It's awesome. Like, the art's amazing. I'm going to, while we talk, I'm going to Google and find out who the hell did it. I want to say it was like Fraction, but it is one of the best like kung fu comics I've ever read. It's so freaking good.
Okay.
And it really digs into like the history of Iron Fist. And all the people who held it over the centuries and what the power is really about. It's cool. It's really, really good. The Immortal Iron Fist, it was 2006, co-written by Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction, and art by David Aja, or Aja, whatever the hell you pronounce his name. So, yeah, so I think
that... I feel like really
bad. Yeah.
Have to get
maybe
that.
Maybe Wikipedia has a thing. But I think that alone basically says it's a good series. Those three people on anything is a buy.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, if I'm going to have a martial arts series, then I think we should go with my next choice, which would be a team-up series, although each one of them could certainly have their own book. It's even cooler as a team-up, Cassandra Cain and Lady Shiva. Now, I know you're asking yourself, hasn't Cassandra Cain gone to great lengths to avoid being surrounded by sociopathic killers? And yet somehow she does find herself frequently surrounded by sociopathic killers, like Lady Shiva. I think that would be an amazing, dark, poor communications-oriented, buddy-slash-enemy kung fu comedy, ladies? What do you think?
I don't know enough. I'm going to claim stupidity on this one. I don't think I really know about enough about any of them.
Well, Cassandra Cain was Batgirl back in the late 90s, you know, during the Zero Hour or whenever Gotham became its own island, before that and after that for a while. And she's always been, you know, a really unique and different Batgirl. She was raised by David Cain to know only the language of violence and not speak. But she's able to speak now. And then meanwhile you have, and she's Batgirl, so she has the whole Bat family legacy, and she's considered by Batman to be one of the top martial artists in the world. Meanwhile, we also have Lady Shiva, who's also considered to be one of the top martial artists in the world. And she's a villain. She's basically a mercenary, Lady Shiva. Like, she just cares about doing martial arts. She does not care who or what it's for. She's completely amoral. And periodically she develops affections, like mentoring sort of affections for other martial art female characters, and decides she's going to go teach them a thing or two. She's a very dark character, and we definitely need more women of color leading their own books. And it seems ridiculous to have no, like, female Asian characters leading, you know, martial arts-oriented books, that we could kind of do something about that.
Makes sense. I'm going with one that's similar to that, is Misty Knight.
Ah, yes.
So one of my favorite comics of the last, like, 5 years or so was, there was a Heroes for Hire where Misty Knight was in charge, and everything started off, every issue started off, like, the Warriors, with her talking into a microphone and be like, are you there, heroes? It's awesome. I loved it. So for me, taking, like, that, or going the other road and doing, like, almost a 70s blaxploitation spoof would be amazing.
Oh, wow. I would certainly enjoy more of her regardless, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's totally underused, but, like, the one of my favorite things was that Heroes for Hire run, where every single one was just her talking into a microphone, exactly like the Warriors, and the whole time I've got the voice of the woman who's doing that in the radio, like, in my mind.
Really, so, good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, so now that's what Misty Knight sounds like, is the woman from the Warriors.
I like it. I like it. That's cool. My next suggestion was Monica Rambeau, a.k.a. the other Captain Marvel. Since we're in the process of giving lots of people whose names Marvel series, then I think we could certainly do with having the awesome Monica have her own solo series. You know, Agents of Hate was, like, next wave agent. Sorry, I'm butchering it. It was a lot of fun, but it was a long time ago-ish. I think that people were really excited to see these show up in the other Captain Marvel book. And I think it would be fun to do something with her centered around New Orleans, you know, which is where she's from, and periodically they show her focused there. It'd be great to sort of get into the culture of the city, to show it that way through her eyes. Certainly New Orleans, you know, needs its own fair share of superheroes, as any other metropolis does. And it'd be a really cool way to explore that part of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, I mean, that would, if she's definitely a character that's on the rise again, and she's, I'm like, I've liked her comeback. Like, I vaguely remember her from back in the day, but I never remember her being, like, a massive A-lister. But using her in, like, a rebuilt New Orleans, and you can talk about that a bunch, would be,
yeah,
it would be really cool. Like, I would dig that.
Totally, totally. And you could periodically have Gambit show up and, like, they can have, like, a thing or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much history in New Orleans for the Marvel Universe that it makes sense. And she's the perfect character,
right,
to headline it other than Gambit.
Yep, yep. I'd love that. So I'm all about that. Now, who's next on your list?
So I'm going with the either-or on this one. I would either do a Maria Hill or a Sharon Carter solo series.
Ooh, interesting.
And
why
it would
not,
be...
Why not an and?
So you can do them both. You can do an and. Just because I think both of them would be very... The way I envision it would be very similar is that in the end, Maria Hill is this one, right now, currently, is the one running S.H.I.E.L.D. Sharon Carter, let's face it, she's kind of, at the point, was the one kind of keeping Captain America's life in order. So doing all these adventures from their perspective would be really, really cool.
Oh. They could do both, then. Why not have it be both? And that way you're really respecting that there's more than one alternate perspective of that. I mean, it's still sort of weird to have it be all centered around a man's story, but I think it's actually kind of radical to show, like, well, this is what else is happening there. How
yeah.
cool.
Like, because that's the thing that always struck me was, like, especially during Brubaker's run, was Captain America would go do something, and then Sharon Carter would kind of show up. And I always wondered, like, what she was doing to prepare and get to that moment. And yeah, I mean, like, I dig that idea of a similar story from a different perspective, especially when it shows her being so vital, whereas in the other version, with the Captain America version, you wouldn't necessarily see them being that, her being that vital. Like, I think that would be really, it would be interesting. And then the Maria Hill part, especially juxtaposing that with how Nick Fury ran S.H.I.E.L.D., or even Tony Stark or Captain America running S.H.I.E.L.D., would be really, really cool, because, like, her needs now and what she has to do and where she came from is way different than all those folks. You know, either coming from the superhero community or were soldiers, whereas Maria Hill, I've only known her as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, so I don't really know her background of being, like, was she in the Army or Marines or whatever. To me, she's always just been a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. So the fact that she's in charge, and I think it would be great to actually explore the idea of, like, these guys who used to be, and men and women that used to be under Iron Man and Captain America and Nick Fury, now having to answer to her. Like, what would that be like?
I like it. I like it. I like it. That's cool. My next pick is going to be Spider-Woman. As you know, I'm a big fan of Jessica Drew. One of the things that really I just always found so interesting about her, and this is from Bendis' run on Avengers, is that she admitted, when she lost her powers, she admitted that she wanted to have her powers back because she wanted to have her powers back. So many female characters they're basically say, like, oh, okay, this woman's parents were killed, so she sought vengeance and she became a superhero. Or this woman was raped, so she sought vengeance and became a superhero. Or, like, something is done to them, and them becoming a hero is a reaction to it. And, like, that's the only lens through which their powers are explained. Spider-Woman was given her powers by her parents because their parents are supervillains. But yep. Spider-Woman likes her powers. She wants to have powers. And she enjoys having that power. And that's not something you see talked about in the comics. And her powers are really interesting, too. You know, she's supporting cast in a lot of things right now, but I don't feel like we're getting the whole story with her. I'd love to see more about her life, you know, her dealing with her past, like with supervillain parents versus, you know, what she's been doing on her own. She was taken over by she was replaced by the Skrull Queen at one point. You know, she definitely had her stuff wrecked through, but I think she's in a good place right now. I'd love to just see her in her own book. I'd love to have Kelly Sue DeConnick write it, especially.
Yeah, I would say there was a series. It was Bendis was writing it, and I'm going to have to look this one up. That was an amazing artist, and I'm totally blanking on who it is. It was the guy I also did Moon Knight with.
Moon Knight. Sorry, we didn't just enjoy saying that.
It was publication history. Really? You're not listing out all the comic series? You failed me, Wikipedia.
Me?
Wikipedia. It's where I'm getting my info right now. I can't think of who the hell did it. It was Bendis wrote it, and it kind of dealt with a little bit of her history, especially a lot of the Hydra stuff. It was a little bit, it was post Secret Invasion, so she was also, like, hunting down Skrulls, which I kind of could have done without, but it was a good series. Like, it was really, really amazing art and pretty solid storyline. So it proved you can do a good series of her. But, yeah, I'm with you. That would be a really, really good one.
But, yeah, she could be doing covert work or she could be doing straight-up superhero reading. Like, I don't even care. I just want more.
Yeah. Yes, I'm with you. So another one I've got, and this one's based off of the fact that a series almost happened. I'm going with the President of the United States. There was...
You want a Barack Obama series.
Yes. So this was what was proposed, and they worked on it a little bit, and then it just died and went nowhere, was the idea of doing a series from the perspective of the president having to deal with all these superheroes and all the stuff that comes up because of it. And, like, how do you govern a country with all these things going on and the decisions that need to be made? And I think they called it, like, the original title was something like 1600 Pen or something like that, like a cheesy, pretty obvious thing. I think that would be, me being a political geek, would be an amazing series, especially if you have someone who really knows government and how it works. Could be very, very cool. I would love to talk to someone who was involved in that to see how far they got and exactly what their ideas were.
Yeah, I like it. That could be creative, and you're right, it would have to be the right writer. If it was the wrong writer, it would be really stupid.
Yeah.
My next pick, and I think it was the last one on my list right now, was The Question, especially Renee Montoya Question. But it could also be Renee Montoya Question communicating the Vic Sage Question through time and space. I would love it as like a hard-boiled detective with her specific personality, taking place in a Gotham, not superpower-oriented Gotham. We were streets-level noir.
That would be a really good one. I actually have a Batman guy on my list as well that would fit into that.
Well, clearly she should be the lead in it, though, because there's just not enough Renee Montoya in the DC Universe right now. In fact, I believe there's no Renee Montoya in the DC Universe, which is the saddest status for the DC Universe to be established again.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think she's around, is she?
Nope, she's not around, because like, clearly DC has plenty of, you know, lesbian women of color in its ranks, so they don't need to have
the
most famous lesbian woman of color in the entire DC Universe present or anything.
But with her, I liked her best when they did during Gotham Central.
You liked her best in Gotham Central? Like a regular beat cop?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I was going to go with my suggestion to get back to the Gotham Central storyline with the character I was going to throw out there. But, yeah, I mean, that's where I really know her from. Like, I never really dug the whole Question thing, and I don't think I read much of her as that, but I loved her in Gotham Central.
Well, I think that the Question would just be another way of her to handle, you know, I mean, like she could be the Question by night and cop by day, maybe.
Yeah.
Like to reconcile them both together. Oh my God, that'd be such a draining life. When I'm done fighting crime in Gotham, I fight crime in Gotham.
Well, she'll just be like Wolverine.
Yeah, exactly.
But when does she sleep?
But, you know, yeah, I mean, it should be like, I don't really think there's any good hard-boiled female detective books out there. The closest we have is the fantastic female spy book that we love called Velvet, which everyone should read.
Actually, there would be one. There's so now I feel like I need to put the series in your hand. Pretty sure it's Greg Rucka does Stumptown, which came out from Oni.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves a detective, and she's just a private eye, like a screw-up private eye. And she has to care for her brother, who I think has Downs, which makes it another interesting thing. I don't remember if she's a lesbian or not. It's really good. I should get you to read it. Like, it's a solid series. There's two volumes out so far. That would be the only other one I know.
I've heard good things about it, but I've not read it.
It was going along the line of Renee Montoya. My suggestion was going to be Harvey Bullock. We've got so many Batman comics. There's always been something about
Harvey Bullock. I don't think I could stand to be around him that much.
So the way I think of him is I kind of think of him as I'm totally blanking out on the character is in from NYPD Blue.
Dennis
Franz. Yeah, Franz played him. But like that type of grumpy, angry guy, and I could see him having maybe a drinking problem, or like he's that guy who really is like everyone thinks he's a bad cop, but he really isn't. He's doing the right thing, or he's trying to do the right stuff, and his social life sucks, and his personal life sucks, and really all he's got is the job, and like it would be a depressing series, but could be so good.
Sometimes Renee Montoya's like that too, though.
Yeah. It's similar. Like, that's the way I think of it. Like, that's what I loved about Gotham Central, was there was that slight glimpse into all those characters' lives, and it kind of hinted at all that stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess
I could bring myself to read it. I don't know. I don't like spending time with Harvey Bullock.
It's understandable. I figure that would be the tough sell out of all of them. But for me, like, I love noir crime type comics, and you got to have like that broken down main character who's questionable and got issues, and something's just so fitting for it.
I gotcha. Although, actually, thinking about that was the last on my official list that I put together, but I did have another thought.
Yes.
I don't know about a solo series, but the world needs more real Amanda Waller, of course. I don't know if there'd be like a secret Amanda Waller, the Secret Files series. You could sort of have her looking back at cases of Thunderbolts, things that happened in the past, and what was the real story behind them.
Suicide Squad.
That's what I meant, Suicide Squad. You know, like what if the setting was like you have a character break into Amanda Waller's files, and it's sort of like reading her files and like seeing her perspective on all these things that happened in DCU history.
I could see it.
Then she walks in on the person doing the break-in. She still holds him up with a gun, and she's like, "Oh, you want to know what happened? Let me tell you." And then you have the whole like, "What's real? What's her playing him as a game?" You know. I'm really liking this idea.
Yeah, I'm like, I would dig that one. She As I say, there is an Amanda Waller one shot that's coming out, and
it's not really
I'm
Amanda
not.
Amanda Waller, though, is it?
No, I mean it's the new Amanda Waller. Mm-hmm. But you know it's coming out. I can go with it. I could go with you. Like I would want the Amanda Waller. I want the Wall. That's the version I want. I want the Wall. I want the Wall from the old
mm-hmm.
DCU.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because you need to have someone as terrifying as her.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So who's next on your list?
It was another kind of an FF reference. I kind of want to see more Yancey Street Gang.
Ah. Yeah.
And it would be something, I think, similar to the Green Team or... it would be similar to the Green Team, but a Marvel-ish version of it. And I think it could be fun.
Nobody likes the Green Team.
No, but a Marvel, a good version of it.
A good version of it.
But it's not really one person. It is the multi-person thing.
Yeah,
so.
It is. That's not a new solo series.
Yes, so it didn't quite count.
One of the things I got really stumped on is, you know, I'm a huge fan of Secret Six, and I really miss Secret Six. And I was like, well, what would have worked on its own? And the DC Universe has been so destroyed, there's really nothing that would make any sense coming out of that.
No, and the thing is I don't think, going back to the old Secret Six, even in that DC Universe, I don't think any of those characters would have been as entertaining by themselves.
Yeah.
I think the team aspect is what really sold that one.
Yeah, I'll buy it.
Womp womp. I'm disagreeing on that one. I'm going with you can't do 666 solo.
No, I buy it. I agree. I totally see what you're saying. That would explain why I couldn't think of somebody who would be right.
Yeah, because I went that with that too. Was thinking of like what are great teams that I really enjoyed, and started kind of breaking them off that way. And she was one that I just couldn't think of. Anyone.
The closest I could think of would be like Jeanette in the past, but like I think that'd be so removed from everything else, nobody'd understand it.
Yeah.
So who else did you have? What else did you have on your list?
I want to see a Silver Sable series come back. I really have fond memories of the old one. Especially you could have some funds with it being an Eastern European country and with what's going on with like the Ukraine right now, and you could do some interesting stuff with that. If it having her almost doing like a Arab Spring sort of thing in her country.
Well, she would be on the bad guy's side because she would work for the government.
Would she? That's the thing. Is like
probably they have
money.
Where
would she
run?
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. Is like, where would she fall into that? So I think that would be kind of cool to explore that.
Yeah.
Going into the Transformers conversation that we had a while ago, I think RC deserves a hell of a lot more exploration. She had like a mini series, but I think further discussion, especially after her running around assassinating a whole bunch of people. That probably could be a good thing.
Yeah. No, if I was going to choose a robot to have a solo series, why not RC?
That could be the quote of the year.
If
I could choose a robot, it's just a funny statement.
Maybe I'm being biased against robots.
Nope. Because there really isn't any other robots to choose in that sort of situation. Female robots. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I got for my list.
Cool. Well, I'm hoping some of our listeners will chime in with some of their ideas, too.
Yes. Definitely when we post up.
This topic is ripe for discussion.
I think so.
If anybody's wondering why we did not have the big conversation around is Martin Luther King Jr. And Professor Xavier, is that a decent parallel or not, is because we're actually scheduling this for a mega-episode roundtable featuring some leading lights in the comics geeks universe that will be happening on February 24th. So stay tuned for that. We'll definitely be telling people when that's coming up, letting you know who our awesome guest hosts are. Some really big names are going to be speaking on this topic. So
it's funny. So we're going to be – most likely we'll be gone for the next 2 weeks. But when we come back, so on the 17th, we've got Steve Orlando, who is a writer. He's got a new series coming out that actually debuts February 19th. Good timing. It's like we planned that one out. His series is Undertow from Image Comics. I read it. I really dug it. It's got some cool political
undertones to it. I looked at a couple pages of it, and I definitely said this would be worth reading. It looked really neat.
I think you'll like it. Like, it's got a lot of discussion on class and stuff like that, so I think it's going to be a fun discussion with him.
Cool.
And then, yeah, you just talked about is the Nerd Roundtable, which actually is a fantastic way to wrap up Black History Month, which is February, right?
Yes, that is correct. Well timed for February.
So it is a good discussion for that month. We're going to have a massive roundtable debating about Xavier and MLK, and is that a fair comparison anymore? And go from there.
Or what was it at the time?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I almost get a spoiler for what my opinion is. I'll keep my mouth shut right now.
And it's funny, like, that's our two shows for February, is those two awesome shows, February, then we're into March.
Yeah. And that's when we'll have all those new female-led comics come for us to go and review and talk about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. And thank you, Greg. I just called you Greg.
Thank you.
I don't know why.
I'm so sorry,
Brett. You've only been my co-host for how many years have you been doing this? 3 years?
I have no idea. We got to go back and count the episodes. I don't know how many we've done yet. That's been on my to-do list.
And I've known you before, and we were friends before that even, so I really have no explanation of this whatsoever. Anyhow.
It's been a long, long time. All right, well, so we are taking a break, I think, for the next 2 weeks, unless I get something that lands in my lap. That's awesome. That's going to be it until mid-February, and then we've got two shows that are going to be back-to-back awesomeness. This is Graphic Policy Radio. You can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com and catch us around the tubes on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, et cetera, all at Graphic Policy. We keep it simple and keep it consistent. So, as always, I am Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
And to the next episode, have a geeky time and enjoy your comics.
Bye.